Hey guys, I am recording this from a moving ship. I'm staring out at the beautiful ocean right now in the sort of Baja area, and I have some amazing musicians rehearsing behind me. Tawny Newsom was kind enough to lend me her phone because I literally have not been able to record an intro or get on the internet the entire time I've been away. It's been an amazing time, but it's been a bit of a technical challenge, so she is going to let me text this via her internet service to Katie, who hopefully will attach this intro, and we can get the Alice Wetterland episode up late today, Friday. I hope you enjoy it. Alice rocks my world. I don't have any shout-outs ready because I'm, again, recording this on a friend's phone, the marvelous Tawny Newsom. So hello to all of you who have been on the cruise. You know my pain, but you also know my pleasure. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I gotta get right into this. This is just already not interesting. I face the window so I could see if someone snuck in, and Alice wouldn't be able to see. So I was saying that if the door opens and someone comes in, I will be the one who's surprised first, which kind of got us into an immediate you just told me that you always assume there's a predator nearby.
You have to. In this day and age.
So,
also beforehand, even more so in the past.
Now more than ever, with the exception of all times in the past, all prior times,
yes.
Much more dangerous.
It was worse before, and now it's very bad as well.
I've seen. But we have much more access to it happening. Boy, I really have a scrunchie on my wrist.
You do.
Speaking of the old days.
But it's a small scrunchie.
This is probably like a... I gotta tell you something. This scrunchie probably is 10 years old, and that is young for a scrunchie. Let's face it. This is a fresh young scrunchie, but because back in the day when I actually would go to get my hair cut opposed to just cutting my own hair, because somewhere along the line I realized I was a wonderful salonist. Not true.
Really?
But I do cut my own hair. But the girl who cut my hair, when you go to see someone who's a specialist and you feel, and this is probably like someone's stand-up routine, and it probably is also from the 80s.
I'll tell you.
But when you feel like their job involves your care for yourself, and so you disappoint them when you don't care for yourself.
So like the dentist, but like
slightly but like less. Hair. Like even less.
Yeah.
Seemingly
but
less
like
important.
They don't guilt you as much. Like the stand-up routine about the dentist is very well established, where they're like, it's so much shame.
Yeah.
It's just all shame.
Yeah. So this is like more aesthetic shame.
Yeah.
By people who are hipper than you. Usually your dentist isn't more hip.
You're
right?
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And so she would be like, what are you like she wanted to know what I was doing behind closed doors. And I said well, I don't know. My hair's getting longer. I had such short hair, like boy hair for such a long time. I don't know what I'm supposed to do to sort of
it would be great if you're
like,
it's none of your business.
And I said, why don't you fucking butt out?
Yeah. Well.
And get the chop done.
My private activity.
And that's why I stopped going to get my hair cut. She said, to be honest with you, you should sleep with your hair in like a loose ponytail, and I would use a scrunchie because hair bands like break your hair.
She said you should sleep with it in a loose ponytail?
Loose ponytail kind of up the top of your head.
Why?
Just keep it from like getting too tangly and breaking
and then
stuff.
You hear from the next person that you go to like, oh, that's the worst thing
you couldn't so possibly harm your hair more.
I'm
surprised it hasn't all fallen out.
Single person will tell you a different thing, which is why it's not a science of the sciences here.
I guess it isn't. There are probably people who would disagree with
you're
that.
You're going to get emails.
The angriest emails I'll have ever gotten will be
hair
related. Yeah. do you go see someone? Do you have somebody that you...
I have a therapist, but I don't...
Does she talk about your hair care?
No, I have...
Listen, I'm very holistic. We need to get really
into it. I actually have a hair person, and this is going to sound so like... Oh God, like yuppie. I never did before. Like I've been through the rigmarole of people being like, okay, you know, I have this hair person. She's amazing. But I finally found somebody that I thought she's great. She works at a salon called Luca. Actually, I don't want to tell anybody because I don't want anyone to take her, but whatever. Her name's Lindsay and she's great. And she is a scientist of hair. Like she knows about, she understands hair on a molecular level and she's really creative. Like every time I go to her and she styles my hair, she is trying out a new thing and she paints and she's just really creative. And she's like one of the most, I don't know, like I, her hair, it's like an art science crossover. Kind of, like I respect, you know what I mean? What she does. And she's a find. And she also is not like interested in becoming like your, you know, what's that guy? Chaz. Dean. She's not trying to be Chaz Dean, but she totally could.
He has his own billboards.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, what you just described to me, and I could be totally wrong about this, is somebody who sounds like they could have done just about anything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they chose hair. And
like
then,
you or
and
I.
You, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Like you or I.
That's right. Yeah. It turns out I'm doing all of it myself. I turned out to be all of those things.
You did.
I do my own hair. Yeah. Therefore, I
left
am a stylist.
2 months, though, so we are
have
worried.
Not. This what is it like out there? I know it rained a lot. I noticed that.
It
at least
did.
That.
Other things are going on. You got to get out of here.
Well. I'm pretty self-sufficient.
There's a bird in your hair.
Oh, so. Jesus Christ. No, that was the advice of the other salon person that I saw.
Let a bird live
just
in
just
it.
Just let a bird in there.
Have you put bird poop on your hair yet? That's
it
a face
mask. It gives your hair such a sheen.
They put bird poop on people's face in fancy Japanese salons.
Do they really? I shouldn't be surprised by that. I shouldn't be surprised by anything.
Pour water into my lap in lieu of drinking it.
Well, that's also something I do. You know what I'm queen of is... knock the have the ice in your glass and decide you want a little piece of ice when you're at the restaurant and it has clumped up into an iceberg
and
it just
all else
plunks you in the head.
To get to the ice.
I mean, I definitely am that person.
I almost said the ultimate sacrifice. The dryness of your clothing. It's not the ultimate sacrifice.
I like those steaks. I really like those steaks. How are you?
I'm well.
Have you been having a frenzied week?
I have a little bit
cuckoo.
You know, like I'm the kind of person where you ask me how I'm doing and I'm like, well, buckle up.
Yeah.
You know, sit down.
You'll give the real answer, the ultimate sacrifice, as it were.
Like that's my newest answer. How are you doing? I'm walking through it.
Uh-huh.
Like, whoa. I'm just really, I'm getting to the point where I need an assistant, but I'm past the point. So it's like, it would be stressful to train an assistant at this point because of the time I don't have to do that. So I have a girl who I'm going to start working with who knows me really well. And I'm like, just going to have her follow me around, I guess, because I don't know what to do. And it's, because my house is like disgusting mail piles and stuff like that. And,
I feel like there could be far more disgusting piles than mail.
Yeah. Though. Well, it's
not like it's old sandwich piles.
It's all mail
stack.
It's all porn though.
That is disgusting.
Porn subscription.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. You start one and they find you, you know,
how old fashioned quaint.
DVDs, magazines. Yeah.
Great.
You know, hustler, jugs, everything. So,
sure.
My neighbors hate me. Uh-huh. No. Yeah. So I'm a bit stressed, but, I can't complain. It's all good stuff.
I appreciate you taking time to do this. I feel like my house might be freezing. You haven't taken your jacket off and
I'm cold. I run cold.
I run cold too. I feel like I run middle hot and appendages so cold. And that is very frustrating because I can't. My core will be fine, say in a hiking environment.
I love you say this. Yeah,
but
core.
But the hands and the feet
hot
are
core.
Like I might be dying. And my nose almost feels like I can't. I immediately 5 minutes out on a cold day, and I can't feel my nose.
It's like
it could have fallen off, and I wouldn't know.
Hand appendages are vampire.
That's right.
And they're feeding off your core, but not
that's
efficiently
right.
enough. They don't care enough about getting warm themselves. I meditate and I routinely, my legs just go numb and I'm just like, oh, it's part of the practice. And
it's all
like, no,
part
it's not.
Of it.
No,
you're
it's
walking
not part
through
of
it. What, are you a person who is do you consider yourself somebody who is frequently very busy or does this feel like, well, now I've gotten unusually busy for me. And so this feels like an unknown kind of like, how do I fucking do this?
I think it's like, I've just come to the realization that I'm like a hard worker and I didn't ever think of myself that way because prior to starting comedy, I did not care about anything enough. So like now that I do a career that I actually love, like I am consistently like – if I'm not working on it, I feel bad. And when I'm working on it, I feel good. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. and like, so I just do, but I didn't think about it that way until my friend was like, well, it seems like no matter what you're going through in your life, you always are working and you're always going to be like, and I was like, oh, that's a compliment. And I didn't even, I just, I'm saying this about myself now because I just realized it. I'm not bragging at all. Like I never, I think I just like doing things that I love. And then, but also I have not found a way to say no to things. And
case like, in point, like, my podcast, look at you.
Well, no, but like I wanted to do this for a really long time. And so this is to me, and also I'm de-stressing right now.
Okay,
I
good.
Mean, we're just decompressing.
Yeah, we are.
But like a show, for instance, or like a taping or a thing or a, you know, like there's just certain, there's certain things that you agree to do, like that you realize later on, you're like, I didn't need to squeeze this in.
I know.
It's but I don't know what I'd be doing if I wasn't.
And also like, I just know what it feels like to want people to, you know, this, the community of like you get to know and you get to really like people. And so when they have a project that they're passionate about and they need some help on it, or they want you to come and do a day or whatever, it feels so good to say yes and no. And then there's that sliver of time.
Yeah.
And usually I feel great. Like I finish doing it. And most of the time I'm like, I'm glad I did that. Mm-hmm. Or like, that's, you know, I'm proud of that person.
Yeah.
But there is sometimes that moment of dread, like 2 days before where you're like, oh God, this is just another thing that's going to make me not do something else right or on time.
And I actually realize now that I'm talking about this, this is going to get really real. Like the part of my life, like when I don't, when I'm not in a relationship, my, like the relationship serves the purpose of going like, hey, hang out, slow down,
take a breath. Yeah.
And whoever is there, I don't remember any of them right now, to be honest, but like whoever's there is like, let's go to a movie and watch it. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm not in a relationship, it's like, well, why would I do that? That would be like 2 hours.
Yeah.
I
could and
be
it's a way of like getting back like, to email. Somebody else is your timekeeper. So you don't, other things just kind of,
and I have no idea. And it's been so long since I've not been in a relationship. I have no idea how to do it on my own at all. So I'm just like, oh, there has to be a method. So I'm like working on it right now, but it's not quite there yet. I'm just astonished every day. Like somebody will be like, what are you doing today? And I'm like, it's like,
yeah,
you can't even. So, but it's okay. It's like, you know, good problems to have for sure. I'm just like, I can't wait till I get that assistant, you know.
Your assistant's going to maybe take the place of the relationship, and then you'll write a sitcom about it.
Yeah.
Where your assistant will be like, I'm not going to go with you to the movie.
Yeah.
But I really want you to go to a movie.
Oh my God. I could totally imagine this girl that I'm going to hire. She doesn't know I'm hiring her yet. I could totally imagine.
Should we bring her in and surprise her? What's her name?
Hi, Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Welcome in. We got to make the surprise of you.
Yeah.
My surpriser voice.
That's really.
Now that, listen, if that voice came piping in from outside behind you, you would know there was a predator on the loose.
I would be on my feet. I would be ready stance.
You would be absolutely ready to kick my ass.
Completely ready to go.
Do you know how to, like, do you have any sort of self-defense skills that are like...
I believe I do.
Oh!
But I don't think I believe in the moment that it's real, but then, like, I actually don't, like, I'm sure when pressed.
Yeah.
You know, I do know that it's better to use the palm of your hand.
Okay, that's good. That's a good point.
Instead of a fist.
Or a fingernail scratch.
Or a fingernail scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah, going for and grabbing is not as effective as like using your body weight, and you're going to want to, because it's going to be a bigger guy, you're going to want to push up, you know, and get him in the jaw, you know, and then you can use your legs at the same time to.
This is all more than I know.
Destabilize, you know.
And I assume I should throw some sort of a kick.
Neutralize.
Neutralize.
Right? You do want to neutralize.
And does neutralizing mean that you cause them to implode or spontaneously combust?
Like you...
Sounds very scientific.
I have a theory that that thing that people do in like action movies where they like twist somebody's head.
Yeah.
Like and break their neck is like way easier than we think.
Ugh.
Like I have a theory that...
It is.
That we just, if you just tried it on your friend,
you would be a
Like, I remember when somebody told me that, like, there's two pressure points in the back of your neck that make you die or something. Like, this is kid stuff, right? And this, of course, I was like, oh my God. So my mom came up to me and put her hand on the back of my neck and was like, hey, kid, how's it? And, and I was like, what are you doing?
My death spots.
Do you not care about me at all? You're touching my death spots.
Were you like, a kid who was susceptible to those kinds of anxieties? Like, did you feel, I mean, I guess all kids are, but yeah. Some kids are like the tellers. It feels like sometimes some kids are the tellers of that, and some kids, maybe to avoid being the receivers.
Yeah.
And then other kids are the ones that are like, what now?
I think I was more wide-eyed.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up? Naive. Minnesota.
Oh.
Mm, yeah. Minneapolis.
Never been, but really? That much tenderness for a place I've never been. It is one of the places in the United States I feel I'm like testing myself right now to think, first of all, have I ever thought about this at length before? Zero times. But also, is there another example of that I can think of anywhere else in the US that I feel that tenderness for? Okay. I have to say it's Minnesota and Wisconsin. Okay. I have and I think it is because of Lake Wobegon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And The Onion.
Yes.
And just people like Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Yeah. Like so many like mild-mannered, hilarious, sweethearts from up there. And I don't know if it's because there's something and maybe I have some sort of like old Scandinavian roots or something, because that's where they all settled.
Yeah.
I don't know why. No, I do look like my family, but I don't think that most of my family you would look at and go like, are you Danish?
Right.
But that's a type of person that I really gravitate towards. So it doesn't surprise me at all now that I'm hearing that you're from Minnesota that
we draw people in.
Did you have an awareness of how other people saw Minnesota when you were like a kid or a teenager? I ask because I have a vague awareness that at some point it became clear to me living in Tucson, Arizona, that everyone thought I rode a horse, which was not the case.
Oh, you know, I don't think so because when I grew up, like I grew up in the city, like in the Minneapolis and like the metropolitan city part of it. So we didn't think of ourselves as kids as like anything but like hard city kids. Like we thought we were like New Yorkers, basically.
And then were you?
You know, and no, I mean, the city of Minneapolis is like, there are parts of it that are dangerous. There's parts of it that's like South Minneapolis. Like there's crack. You can get crack. I've bought crack in South Minneapolis before.
And I can't wait to unpack that.
You know, and I will tell you that it's like, you know, it's like any other city that has that. And I grew up in that part of the city. So I never believed, like, I never saw myself as corn fed in that way. A lot of people like from the suburbs, like we joke about each other, but especially when you're an adolescent, you don't think of yourself as part of anything.
Yeah.
You're your own unique pain existent, you know, like existential crisis having, mm-hmm. you know. You're definitely not from where you're from. You don't belong.
Right.
So
right.
Why would you be thought of it that way? You know,
but as a hardened city kid, did you feel like you felt at least grateful that you weren't out in the suburbs somewhere?
Maybe? I sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because how did you express your angst when you were a teenager?
Well, and also, like I say, like I was completely wide eyed too at the same time.
Right.
So I was like very naive. You can tell in how like difficult, like I thought it was so hard. And then it's like, well, that's because I was so naive and stupid. Yeah. I remember when I was like in eighth grade and I wanted to buy a CD, like I was on my very first CD buying with my stepdad and I wanted to buy like Alice in Chains and my mom, like for some reason we had to call my mom and see which CDs I was allowed to buy or something like that. and she said like, no, you're not going to buy a CD by a band called Alice in Chains.
That's never thought, never really, yeah, never thought about
not gonna happen.
Those titles, that is sort of adorable, like, to what? Go, wait, oh, I can't hear that title without associating it immediately with the music. So Alice in Chains is meaningless to me, except for it's this band.
Yeah.
But if you did hear it as a mom, like, you would be like, I'm gonna take this right apart and say, take a look at these words together.
You know, and she was like, I want you to say it to me and wonder why you think I would ever let you do that. And I was like, oh God, mom, it's just a music band. And she was
then you really should have tried to lean into Nirvana
Leaned into Nirvana and I bought Pearl Jam's 10 and that set the course of my life.
And what is Pearl Jam?
Wow. This is going to be a long podcast. Well, 10 is a seminal
Yeah.
Seminal album. It's soon as Jeremy spoke in class.
But I mean, like, so, your mom, I would, if I were your mom, yeah. I would have been like, I don't know what Pearl Jam represents, but it right. sounds less dirty.
Yeah.
It sounds like it could mean something
oh.
else.
Well, but she just didn't want Alice in Chains. She was
Alice
just like that.
She didn't
want
to see Alice
She's
tied
like,
up
I
in chains.
I will draw a line at that.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like it.
Yeah.
She's like, my mom would do these things that would infuriate me when I was young. And she'd be like, you know, because I don't feel like it. And I don't want you to do that. Mm. And I'd be like, why? It's so not just, you know, there's no justice, no peace, you know? And my mom would be like, yeah, it's kind of because I'm the boss. So that's what it is. And now I really respect that. And I'm like, yep. I love that parenting that she's just like exerting her power just because she could. But as a way of being like, you need to understand that like I am the authority here and don't feel like you can just, you know, do whatever you want. And she was really strict with me, but I think it's because she had a
Are you an only
really,
child?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And so as an only child, do you feel like you were obsessed with justice? Like obsessed with things being fair?
Yeah, I do think so.
I cannot stress this enough to people, parents of only children. Like try to integrate them with other kids and don't do the thing where you're like explaining everything too much, because when you do that and you're like, well, here's why that's
then
happening,
you're really
that's
always
happening.
Looking for that reason.
Yeah, and you're like, okay,
and
so everything is always
control
for a
it in some way. Like you have to understand the control of the universe in that particular way.
And it, if you have siblings, there's this thing that, or maybe a lot of cousins that you're close to. When you're a kid, you're like, it's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair. And essentially the message you always end up getting is, well, yeah, it's maybe not fair and you could gripe about that and sit alone by yourself in the corner, or you could get the fuck over it and play. And that's the only way that you get to is if you get over and you let go of what's fair and what's not fair and just go with the flow. And that's a really valuable lesson.
Yeah.
You know, when you're really young. And my mom was like oldest of five kids. She was always made the caretaker. So she was like, if your toys are yours, You know, does that mean you need to share? And I was like, yes. And she was like, not really, actually. They're your toys. And it was part of this grand lesson that she was trying to impart with me. Like, my body is mine and nobody else gets to touch my body. And so she was like, your property as a woman is going to be questioned your entire life. And you need to know that it's your property and you do not need to. And I was like fucking 6 years old. So it's like, whatever, toys fine, whatever, toys are mine. You know,
that's very progressive though, right? Thing. That is a pretty progressive form of parenting for, I mean, maybe not now, like maybe moms who have a 6 year old now might be saying stuff like that, but I would say probably
well,
in general,
philosophy
that philosophy
behind
unique.
It is progressive. And maybe people, like, I feel like people don't understand how much the revolution of puberty for women, you change from being this kid, this free kid, into like, you know, you're running around being happy, you know, breaking things, getting in trouble. And then one day your body starts looking a certain way to certain people, and all of a sudden you're no longer this like brain in a body suit walking around, you know, doing stuff and experimenting. You're like this sort of, you're the goods, you know, and like you said that, like that shifts your perspective of who you are in the world so much. And I think people don't really get that when they parent. I mean, they forget about it when they're older, you know, and it's such a crazy, like, revolution of mind that needs to be kind of treated with, like, you know, and I think my mom really tried really hard to prepare me for that.
Yeah.
To say like, okay, so this is what's going to happen. You're going to go through this. Like, sex is means this. So this is what it means. And this is what this kind of thing means. And this is when like somebody touches you and like you feel a way about it. Like, she tried to get me really, you know, like my first sex talk was when I was like 6 years old.
Wow.
You know, and she wanted to like continuously have a dialogue going with me and feel. And the one thing I will say is that like, whatever, you know, she tried to do, the one message I got was that my mom was really strong. She's the strongest person in the world and she always had my back. So like there was no time in my childhood, even though I had a lot of fucked up stuff happen to me, like I never had felt like I didn't have like one safety net with her, you know?
Wow. That says a lot.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
Well, she's 22 when she had me too, which is
So
it's crazy that she was able to
there you go.
Do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's that's crazy. Amazing. What, I mean, I just got to cut straight to the buying crack in Minneapolis, Chase.
Oh, right.
Let's get right into it.
Well,
when was that?
An experience with drugs and alcohol my whole life, and alcoholism runs in my family. So, I was pretty heavy. Like when I graduated college, I had like I said, like I had a really good mom. I had my stepdad's amazing. And like when I was a kid, I had a ton of opportunities to get really a great education. And Minneapolis is an amazing city. There's so much art and culture. And I was always busy and I was always full of, you know, I had so many activities. And then academics were a huge thing. And so I had a lot of pressure to do really well in school. And I loved school. I loved learning. And like when I went to college, I got into this really good college and, I started drinking around then, but I was always too busy to kind of drink and use drugs the way that I wanted to. Like I never had free time ever when I was, until I was like 22 years old, I was busy all the time. Mm-hmm. I went to Spain on a, like a foreign exchange. And I really started drinking a lot there because you can, and right. like everybody does all the time. And then like when I got out of college, it got really heavy. I started drinking really heavily and using a lot of different drugs. There was like, it was New York. There was a lot, you know, I want to be like New York in the early aughts, you know? Oh my God. You hear stories. Like
everyone
actually
talks
no one hears stories.
It.
No one's ever heard those. you know, I mean, I hung out with like musicians all the time and we just, you know, there was just, it was, I was in a party world and, I remember.
Do you find that you're, so here's a question I want to ask about that, because I think this is true of me, is that I'm really good. I don't know that I'm, I very well may be. Taking the word addict or addictive personality out of it, I would say that I feel like I crave some sort of structure. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that some people, when you're like that, the structure is the structure, whether the structure is that you're high all the time mm-hmm. or the structure is that you're never high. Mm-hmm. If there's a consistency to it, that mm-hmm. is somehow what feels like I'm responsible. Yeah. Like, yeah. Listen, this is my lifestyle. I do this, 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 and this, yeah, and I'm very consistent about it. And sometimes for me, that was, you know, stuff that was not advancing me emotionally right. Or intellectually. And sometimes it was stuff that was maybe to a point where I was too hard on myself.
Right.
But like, you know, sort of finding that in between where, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that
and it also makes me go, well, maybe the thirst for structure and the, like the desire to have, some kind of authority or whatever is when you medicate yourself against that, it's like, oh, because your brain stops, it's spinning,
yeah.
you know? And so whenever I, like when I graduated from college, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And that was really scary. So like, oh, I had all these like dreams that I was going to pursue and I was going to maybe get a Fulbright scholarship and then I wasn't going to do that. And then I was going to maybe be a fashion designer and then I was going to maybe, you know, make a documentary film. And like none of these things were working because I didn't have any structure. I didn't have any like real ability to work on my own. And I didn't feel any passion. Like I felt passion about like getting to the part when it was done, but I never felt like I wanted to work on any of the things. And that was really scary.
Yeah.
So, to stop my brain from spinning and, I just started doing drugs like yeah. all the time. And it was great. Cause I was just like, okay, I can just relax. And if things didn't go my way, you drink. If things did go your way, you drink. Sure. And it's just like, oh yeah. Cause this is like, you feel all of a sudden when you drink that release of pressure and you're just like, oh, cause it doesn't matter. None yeah. of it matters. I'm
God,
just going to party
I,
and it's going to be great.
I don't have that relationship to alcohol at
yeah,
all.
Yeah. It's not, well,
like mine is, it's a, like yeah. it's a depressant. And for me, yeah. it is instantly a depressant.
Yeah.
Like I just have that much, like whatever is going on with my body, I'll yeah. have like an hour of like, this feels pretty good. And then I will go to like the depths.
Yeah.
Like, but it's also allowing me to see that life is bullshit and it sucks for everybody,
right.
not just me. Like it will go to depressant so fast
see,
that I can't get the high. So in that way, I'm lucky because alcoholism does run in my family too.
That's great.
In that way, I'm sort of glad that like it
that's
skipped
really
me ahead to like the regret quickly.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, other things don't give me that,
sure.
you know, in a way
I mean,
that's
I
not real or what
we
have
as
you.
Humans all have that quality of like needing to check out. And I think for me, like, and I hear this from a lot of other alcoholics that like the thing is that when you're not actively using or drinking, you kind of have an awareness of like a moral code of like, well, I should be working hard on something because otherwise I'm not giving back and I want to be a part of something because that's good to be a part of a community. So what decisions am I making that are creating that? And what decisions am I making that are not creating that? And when you drink, it's like, oh, who gives a fuck? You know, immediately that turns off that like moral compass that's constantly guiding you and making you feel like you're not doing the right things and making you feel like everything you're doing is, you know, trash or whatever. And then you just like drink and it's like, oh, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want because I want to, and that's what I want. And it's going to be about me getting what I need, which is what you secretly want anyway as an alcoholic. But in your waking life, you have anxiety, you have shame, and it's there to kind of like temper that. Right, but when you're using, it's like, yeah, go for it. And that's, you know, and then you have these crazy stories where you get into trouble, where you buy crack in Minneapolis, which I moved home for a little bit to save money. And I was just hanging out with some people and we were looking for cocaine and like we, no one had cocaine. And then somebody had crack, the 50 millionth person had crack and they were like, okay. And I was like, no, 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 no. Yeah. And then like you smoke crack and immediately, I don't know. I feel like it's bad to talk about this because I don't want anyone to ever try a drug that is so addictive notoriously, but it's crazy. You try it and it's, everything's okay. Yeah. Like I've never had anything work that quickly.
Right.
It's like getting a hit in the face. It's like everything changes immediately. Yeah. You inhale and you're like, oh, there's literally never been a single problem on earth.
Oh, God.
It's that connection to disconnection.
Yeah.
And
well, there's a reason. I mean, even it takes for your brain a person who's listening to this, who, you know, if you don't know by now that it's not worth it, you're not going to be in a place where this makes any difference at all. True. Like, I totally get that because there was a point at which I wouldn't have heard anything. I was so, you know, like, I have my special LSD and no one can tell me it's bad for me. And maybe it wasn't and maybe it wasn't, but nothing anyone else said was going to penetrate that armor, you know, because that's what I was into. But I mean, there's a very specific reason that that is the drug that the poor want and have access to, because it's this, it's the only, you know, if it's the only means of escaping,
right?
Because they don't have, you know, they whoever, you know, somebody's like, well, can't they just go for a walk or something? He's like, we're past that,
right?
We're past like, well, the huge, like, go for a jog. Yeah. No, we're past that.
And if your parents grew up in trauma and your grandparents grew up in trauma, and your entire life has been nothing but trauma.
And a sense of hopelessness.
Yeah. And there's no infrastructure in your life at all because, you know, whatever city you live in, they just refuse. So, you know, there has to be a fuck it button that you press, because there's one way of like making it through life without just killing yourself. And this is the thing that people don't understand. But, you know, what I've learned in like getting sober is that like, oh, it affects... There is that impulse in so many of us to get to that place where we're just like, fuck it. We check out. And that's what the disease is. But I do think it's like, since it's a hereditary disease, it affects communities like, you know, in a different way. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, there's a lot of outreach to like prisons and stuff like that, and prison populations, and the way we, oh my God, the way we as a society treat like disease, like the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction is so backwards, and it's so not helping anyone at all. And I think deliberately so, you know, because people make money off prisons. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I'm grateful for my experiences because I didn't die, and now I can be not. And now you start like living your life and learning how to, it's crazy. Cause like I started drinking probably when I was 17, which is late for a normal like alcoholic, but I feel like I'm 17 most of the time.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, did you feel like you had some arrested development?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have arrested development. Yeah. I mean, it shows up in so many areas of my life, and I didn't start doing stand up until I was 27. So, you know, I took a long time to get anywhere near like real maturity. Mm. So that's what it is. But
well, you know,
I can really
do like,
about it.
But it's also, it's funny because like that's around the age I was when I started doing this kind of stuff. Mm. I did it in high school. Like I majored in theater in college, whatever, mm-hmm. but I was so pragmatic about it. I was like, no, this is not, this is a lark. This is something I'm going to do. 'Cause I don't know what the fuck else to major in, but it wasn't like, here I go off to Hollywood. And so I was around that age when I stopped doing. And so, but my was like it was like almost the opposite. It was like, I was trying so hard to do grown up jobs that finally realizing that this can be a grown up job as batshit as some of it is, and as silly and privileged as some of it is, 'cause it is like, wait, laughing, like making people really.
Yeah.
But that I was doing the opposite. I was rebelling against that, a similar dream with like very adult choices. Like, I'm going to work for as an inventory manager for blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm going to. And so it's funny when, you know, I feel like I took a, you know, I took a quote unquote long time to get to that point too. And yet it was a completely different road.
Well, because you're never ready until you're ready to do a thing. And, you know, as much as I want to have regrets about not doing UCB when I first got to New York, there's no other path for me.
And you don't know. You don't know what would have happened. Like, you could have had a horrible experience there at random.
The thing is, like, if the best thing possible happened, which is like that I got cast on SNL at like 20 years old, I would be dead.
Oh my God. That's how I feel too.
I just would be knowing my history, obviously, with what I did. Yeah. I was not old enough to regulate myself in that way. So I don't think I would have survived that experience.
I completely relate. I completely relate.
Yeah.
What did you say you love school. What did you, before the age of 17, what was the stuff that was keeping you so busy and the wheels turning? What different activities were you doing and what were you passionate about or doing, even if you didn't feel passion, I guess?
Yeah. I was really into sports till my sophomore year. I was on a, like when I was in seventh grade, I did theater until, probably my freshman year of high school. I was really into theater since like from like fifth and sixth grade. I really wanted to act and I really wanted to entertain in some way. But, when I got to high school, I specifically enrolled in this one public high school that had a really good theater track. Like, Josh Hartnett went to my school. Rachel Lee Cook also went to my school. A lot of people that are really into theater. There's a huge, like, live theater culture in Minneapolis. I got to high school and it was already clear that, like, these people have been professionally pursuing this for many years before this, and I was not a part of that community, and I was not accepted into
that
it at all.
That is so bananas to me. I mean,
in Minneapolis, you think, oh, it's a public high school. It's not like a conservatory. Yeah. But I tried out for seven
plays. It
just
makes me so sad to think that, you know, as a barely teenager, you would have missed the boat on something artistic. Feels crazy.
It was, I would say, I maybe fell through the cracks, but I don't know that it was like that for every person, you know, knowing me. I have a lot of pride and ego involved in it. So there was, I'm sure that I shot myself in the foot in some way. And I wasn't ready for any kind of rejection. So that maybe was what set me on a different path. And on the same time when I was in seventh grade, I showed a lot of promise at softball. So I started playing for a high school team in seventh and eighth grade. And then, I kept doing that into sophomore year, but that was at the same time that I was leaving to go to an arts high school that, was like a sort of a magnet school in Golden Valley, Minnesota. And I was pursuing like visual arts at that point. And so I got in, like, you know, and, had a good time. There was a lot of, really, really, really cool people that I met there. And I pursued like painting, mostly painting and printmaking. And then, I went to, which printmaking is such a like Minneapolis. It feels like printmaking is the most like high school-y art person, like art. If you have like a TV show about like a kid in high school, it's like silk screen, you know, it's super. Yeah. So then I got into Cooper Union, which is a pretty prestigious art school. It had a really low acceptance rate at the time when I got in. I was like really, really stoked. But the crazy thing is like people are like, wow, Cooper Union. But it's funny because it's not Harvard. You can't test for like people's aptitude at like being artists at 18. So you get there and you're like, I'm the cream of the crop. And then somebody's like, hey, what's up? You want to hear some reggae? And you're like, oh my God. Oh my God. It runs the gamut. I mean, there are some brilliant artists that came out of Cooper. People that were just miraculously ready at 18, 19 years old to figure out that what their path was. I mean, I was astonished. There's so much good art coming out of like my high school class. But I was not one of those people. I just didn't ever settle on anything. Yeah. I just did everything when it was available to me. And I just like worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and like just never really, nothing I did ever really made any, like, I had my senior year thesis project and that was, that made a dent. Like people were like, okay, this is good.
But what was it?
I did a like kind of a performance art class when I was in Spain, and I would do this thing where I would. There's so many statues in Europe of like men, and they're everywhere you go. And so I would climb them, and then I would like kiss them on the mouth, like the filthy statue mouth of these. And then I would like have somebody document that. So yeah. I had like the photographs of like a girl randomly like climbing these, and having these. It was. I guess people thought it was interesting because it played with scale. Mm-hmm. Cause like sometimes they'd have these really small heads and sometimes they had big heads and yeah. there were these monuments that you were kind of, playing with and mm-hmm. bringing down, making personal in this way. But I, that was it. And then I graduated and then I didn't really know what I was going to do for so long. The career services department at my college at that point was non-existent.
Oh boy.
There was a binder of jobs. I swear to God, I've told the story before.
Binder.
There was a job binder. It was
right next
thick.
To the restaurant menu binder.
And it was empty all the time. And one time I opened it and there was one job advertised in it. And the job was for dean of the art school.
Oh, geez. That feels like
that was the job
prank.
That was available.
It
was,
oh no.
It was so insane.
How scary.
It was so insane. I was like, what are you going to divide it among unpaid interns? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So I, you know, that was what I, cause I rejected theater. I was like, no, theater's not for me. It's not serious. It's not for serious artists because it had rejected me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had Understood. To judge it and make it not a non thing. And when people said, oh, you should maybe try comedy. I was like, well, that's dumb and lame. Like I'm an artist. Do you understand like how incredibly important I am? And like my voice is very, you know,
uh-huh.
I never thought about stand up. I never thought about, you know, doing improv until I was like 27 and I was super, super, super depressed. And I just didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. And somebody told me they wanted to take a improv class just for fun. A friend of mine. And I said, okay, like we'll do it. And then he never registered. And I finally just went for it. And I was like, huh, this is actually kind of good. It felt good. It just felt good to be expressing myself in that way. And, I felt funny and I'd always liked feeling funny. And then I took Curtis Gwynn's 201 class and that's where it just hit. It was like, he was at a good point in his teaching and he just communicated to me like why this is important, you know? Cause that's what I needed. I needed to hear comedy could be something
to be given permission in a sense.
Yeah. To be
exactly. Yeah.
To be told that this isn't about, you know, this isn't about like, you know, comedy clubs and like these, being goofy and like putting on a costume and, it's not a popularity contest. Like this is about shifting a perspective and embodying something and changing the course of the day for people, changing the course of, you know, like he talked about comedy in a way where it was theoretical and it was like intellectual.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was these like, it was these like lofty perspectives of something I'd never, ever thought of as being at all important. And I started remembering my youth and like growing up and watching Roseanne and like, you know, the stuff that I like SCTV when I was little, my dad was obsessed with it. So I like, was like, oh my God, it's true. It's like, this is such a huge part of my life. And I never, ever thought about it. And suddenly it's just my whole world opened up. Yeah. Everything changed in that class for me.
Did you have relationships as a teenager? Did you get involved? Because I know your mom was so upfront about it. I could see that changing zero about what was going to happen for you. But I could could also imagine feeling like the sort of freedom to explore that earlier, or almost going against that and being like, I don't want to talk about this thing. And I don't even know if I want to think about having sex now that we've had this conversation when I'm six. Do you feel like that had any impact on relationships? Did you have any when you were in high school?
I had so many.
Yeah.
I was a lesbian for an entire year.
Great.
Because I was in love with this one girl and she was, I still believe that she was closeted. And so I think I was like, it was like a challenge or something, but I really had feelings for her. Mm-hmm. And then I like wanted. So I became incredibly butch for an entire year. I mean, there's pictures of me where it's like, wait, like so crazy. Oh. And I was into it. And that was my life. That was my social circle.
Yep.
Which was amazing, actually. And some of the best years of my life, because lesbians are great, especially when they're in high school. And we had, it was a very liberal, it's a liberal town, a very LGBTQ, like, centric city, and there is a very active gay community. And like, I grew up with, you know, a lot of, like, my mom was friends with a lot of gay men, trans women too. Mm-hmm. One of my babysitters was a trans woman named Auntie Betty, who was like 7 feet tall. And my dad would be like, what is happening? so I just had like this, like a great experience. There was two all lesbian sports teams at my high school. So it was like, it was great. It was
that's
like the
awesome.
Best
I mean, that's
social
awesome.
Group to be in.
Sure.
But then before that I was dating, like I had boyfriends when I was in eighth grade and beyond. And I was pretty sexually active, all throughout high school. I didn't actually like have intercourse sex until I was 17. At that point I did just have sex and I wanted to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a virgin when I went to college, mm-hmm. kind of thing, like a mm-hmm. guy. So I did kind of have like a, you know, a different experience of, it was more like I was more predatory probably towards men than most women were, young women. But, yeah, I always had a boyfriend. I've pretty much always had a boyfriend since I was 17.
Yeah.
Always. Like I've never been single really.
So there would be like a bit, no, I'm really going to pry because you can just tell me to fuck off. But does that mean that you would have overlap, or does that mean you would be single for a very brief period of time at which you would meet someone?
It was usually a very brief period. Yeah. I might have had one overlap at one point, I think. Yeah, but otherwise it was brief. It was like two months.
I cast no judgment on it. Because for some people, that's how you get out of something. And I've certainly been in that position where I hate ending things, and I hate hurting people, and I hate being hurt and all of that. And that fear... Yeah. Kind of propels you to a place where like you have to have an impetus. And as a young person, you can't think of anything other than I'm into someone else now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like, I got to get out of this for no and other reason than now I'm really lying or that, you know,
if I look back on like my first boyfriend and everything, it was always, I always felt powerless against my, my desire for love from men. I always felt extremely thrown into the, like the roller coaster. I live very strongly in my emotions all the time. And it like, finally, when I started acting, it was like, oh, this is useful in one arena.
Right.
It was always a burden in every part of my life. And finally it's like something I can use. But before I, you know, I just like guys would dump me. I'd be devastated, or I'd have to dump somebody and I'd be devastated and literally like just so just inconsolable, mm-hmm. to the point where it's like, my mom was like, what, who are you? Like, why is this happening? It's just a guy. Who cares? You're 18, you're 19, you know, you have such a long life to lead. She was always really confused about that. And I think it was like hard for her, 'cause she was like, why I haven't raised this person, you know? And I don't think she did. I think it was a lot to do with other stuff that happened to me and my dad, and also alcoholism, you know, burgeoning alcoholism. So it, you know, I will say like people told me, I've had this message before, like maybe take some time alone, mm-hmm. you know, and I've said it before, like I've been saying it my whole life, like I really just need to be alone. And then getting sober was the first time where it was finally removed. The option to move on from relationship to relationship, mm-hmm. and bounce was finally just removed for me. Like I couldn't do it anymore. It wasn't interesting.
Yeah.
And that's, that's just not the way I felt before. So it's boring. It's super boring. It's boring. So I keep myself insanely busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like both stressful and boring, and I'm not getting that validation from anybody. So it can be like a crisis of confidence. I was telling somebody the other day, like I can't deal with this shit yesterday. I can't deal with it last year. There's no way I can like deal with it before, because it's now, and this is what's happening now. And so I have to face it now. There's just no other option for me. It's like, this is just it. So,
but that's huge. I mean, that's huge, because that is the, that's speaking of patterns. Like that's one that I think people
get pulled into is the pattern of regret. Mm-hmm. And that's like a comfortable place to live. Like, yeah. Oh, well, you can always just, instead of moving forward, you can always just wish you'd done it before.
Yeah.
And then hate yourself for not having done so. And just continue. You'll stay in that forever. Oh, yeah. Because the moment now when you're regretting something else, a year from now, you're going to regret that you weren't doing something because you were regretting a year before that. So good luck. You know, I mean, that's something that we all have the capacity to do. So that ability to sort of just shut that voice off and say like, you're useless to me.
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Brain, thanks, no I know thanks. You're trying to somehow take care of this and like repair something in the past.
Yeah.
That's not how our conception of time works. So you're going to have to like shut up so I can move forward, you know?
Which is meditation. That's
the is meditation. Absolutely.
To deal with it.
Absolutely. Okay. Listen, I got to get into this.
Are we
MASH
doing MASH?
Game. Yeah.
Okay,
we're going to do this MASH game.
God, I think so
that
much.
I think that I want to embrace the irony of the MASH game, the necessary category of your alternate universe, husband slash wife slash
I still have crushes,
crush slash so. Just somebody you would want to sleep with. It can be a character from a movie or book too. It doesn't have to be like this one famous person. It could be like someone they played or something like that. Three.
So, Mark Ruffalo.
Great.
The character.
Perfect.
I really want to tell a story. Okay. So
please
my friend and I both, are like I have a best friend. I know I'm 35. I have a best friend and she and I have no overlap with guys at all. Like never have.
Handy.
And it is, but it's also like confusing because we're like, wait. No, and I'll be like, this is my new boyfriend. And she's like, oh, you know, she's like, what?
I don't see it. I
it
don't
always,
see it.
And she likes the certain guys. And I'm like, he smells like a, you know, it just never happens. And a part of it is like, you just wouldn't be interested in your friend's boyfriend, but like the crushes even. So one day we were working together at this store and we were like, I can't believe this. We just went over. So we spent 8 hours the entire workday listing, you know, guy after guy, Leonardo DiCaprio. She's like, yeah, I love Leo. And I'm like, I'm not into it. Matt Damon. That's more me.
You know,
like, what about, ASAP Rocky? I'm like, oh my God. She's like, he doesn't do it. And finally at the end of the day, we're tired. And I'm like, Mark Ruffalo. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And I was like,
dun, dun, dun. You found
and
your
it's
common
our one
ground.
Venn diagram
is such a sliver of a wonderful man.
Overlap.
Yeah.
Is fucking just Mark Ruffalo.
That's
so
amazing.
He always is first.
That's fantastic.
First on the list. And then, fantastic. Okay, the Beast in Beauty and the Beast after he changes into the sexy guy.
Mm-hmm. In the cartoon version?
In the cartoon version. Okay. We haven't seen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think there was like might have been a TV show where.
Because it's
someone
like he's the hottest guy.
Yeah.
But he's humble because he's been straight up living as a beast for so long. So
that's
he didn't even know. He's like one of those hot guys.
You. That beast is not bad looking either.
Okay. Thank you.
You know?
Hello.
He's
I need
got
to get tore. When I want to get tore up, I go to the Beast. I go right to the Beast. She got to be a little bit disappointed sometimes when she's like, me, Beastie.
I know.
Like
I
afterwards,
know.
She's like, you're so gentle now. And then, Peter Quinn from Homeland.
Okay.
That character.
Oh, boy. He needs some loving.
I can't
this
wait.
Season.
Oh, my God. She's like, I don't really want to hang out with you. I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's a trained war fighter. Who wrote that dialogue? That's not real. Okay. All right. Those are my three.
A trained war fighter. Okay. Next one is you can either sort of transport yourself to a concert or you can sort of be somehow in a room where it's almost like your own private music video of three bands, living or dead, singer, songwriter, doesn't matter.
Shit. Okay.
But they sort of belong to you in this like gross, wonderful way that we all sort of wished when we were in high school. Like, why doesn't this band only love me and me alone?
Okay. I know what that is. The Breeders.
Oh,
my favorite band.
Great, 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 great.
Ever. I've been listening, I mostly listen to rap music right now. So I want to be like Migos, but they just said some weird stuff about it. Okay. I'll just put Ray Shrimmered.
Wait, how do you spell?
It's R-A-E, super dyslexic, S-R-E-M-M-U-R-D. Does that look right? No, that's not right, but whatever. Okay. Well, you'll get emails.
It's my fault
I
for
can't.
Not even knowing.
No, it's
but,
not.
Okay. All right. And then
I listen to them every day and I still don't know. Okay. And then the other one, who, a music video.
But I mean, you know what I mean? It's like,
it's embarrassing. Just, I mean, like Beyonce, I would never be involved in a Beyonce production because I'm,
but this is like,
I'm not just white. I'm like extra white. She did have white girls on her, like in her Grammy performance. And I'm like, how do you get, and it would just never be me. I have no rhythm. I'm a horrible dancer. I've been trying for a long time, but I'm bad.
Yeah.
She is absolute the monarchy.
I think I specifically avoid dancing because I want to believe I'm good and I'm sure I'm not. But but I do get excited when I'm doing it. And that to me feels like it translates to being good, which, you know, I guess for all intents and purposes it does. So
yeah, I guess so.
I'm a great dancer. also like joke dancing a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay. And then let's do three sort of alternate universe careers where they're it's only the good side of whatever it is.
Oh, really? Okay. So country western singer.
Great.
Just, you know. I want to do something where I work with animals, like rescuing them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be like I want to like be a shark researcher or the person that's like photographing them and then doing like stipple paintings or whatever.
It's great.
And I would say a teacher.
Great. Okay. Now let's do three. This is a vacation home. So of course you'll have a mansion, apartment, shack, or house, but this is vacation home, but it's a vacation home inside of a movie.
Oh.
So it's like, you're not reliving the plot, but you're in that world. So it could be Middle Earth, could be Harry Potter, could also be Goodfellas.
Okay. I'm glad you brought up Middle Earth because I feel like they're all going to be. Okay. So I want to live in Rivendell.
Great. Yeah.
For sure. I guess. Shit. I mean, now I'm like, okay, maybe. Is there like a cool undersea movie? Or something like that. Is there a movie about? Oh, that alien world from The Abyss.
I was just going to say
perfect.
That.
Yeah.
So good. Everything's all like calming neon pink and blue somehow. Yeah.
And I got to get my.
Which, by the way, is not so dissimilar. It doesn't look that dissimilar from where Daryl Hannah is taking Tom Hanks in Splash. Like all of a sudden at the very end of the credits, you're like, what?
Yes. The very minute.
This is like metropolitan city like, underwater.
I want to watch that movie.
Yeah. Like don't. What are you fucking. What
Why are we not.
Yeah.
Watching that movie.
Yeah.
So, like somewhere in the space. So maybe on one of the like Star Trek, space stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You say Deep Space Nine, Deep Space Nine,
Deep Space Nine. I love it. Deep Space.
Is that the name of it? God, I'm so sorry. I feel bad that I don't
Star
know
Trek
the name.
Deep Space Nine. Yeah. That's
Starbase.
Definitely. Oh, I just
it's
know that that's the name of the,
it's
that
the name
show.
Of the, whatever. All right. Somebody's going to yell at me later.
People know. These people, listen, these people love these
listen,
MASH games.
They'll eat it up.
Nobody,
whatever we do, they'll just
it. You made a Star
right
Trek
up.
Reference. I think that is very attractive to many of us. Okay, next category. Let's do like a, it doesn't have to be a superpower in the conventional sense, although it certainly could be, but it could also be, so it could be like anything in the sort of X-Men world where everyone has like the craziest, like just the one thing they can do, but it could also just be like a skill. Like I can play guitar perfectly, or I can speak all languages or something like that.
For some reason, I've always wanted to be really good at figure skating.
Great. Boy, I get that.
It's not
it's one of
something
those things
I could,
that looks like it has to be magic. Somehow.
Yeah. I'm really embarrassed because like, well, I'm super into superhero movies too. So
me too.
Like I would love to be a vampire slayer.
Great.
That'd be great. And then, but like I used one on figure skating. So that's, maybe there's a way for me to, all right. So then, I don't know. I went snowboarding a couple weeks ago and I was like, so I thought I was going to be so much better at it than I was. It's just such a, what if I was just like, I want to be the first female MLB baseball player.
Great.
So like just imbue me with the qualities I would need to do that. Like pitching or something.
Great. I'm really into like imaginary world right now, but
it's already,
but I know
whatever
that you're
my life
into
is going
to
be.
So,
it's already,
yeah, this is
smashing.
Golden. You got some really golden stuff here. Okay, well, I'm going to do this one first because I always got to work this in. Three things that in this reality are bad for you on some level. You could go with the euphoria you have felt that you can't have again from drugs.
Ugh.
I'll understand that. But for me, it usually is like a food that I either can't have too much of because I'm allergic, or it'll make me obese, or I'll have a heart attack, or it's like, it could be something that I just, you can't just have when you want it. Like, oh, that thing in New York that I just always crave and I can't go there and eat it like that. But at the snap of my fingers in this world, there it is.
Hmm.
A lot of options.
Like a thing that's bad for you that you want.
In a, yeah. That's sort of the idea is like this kind of gross, permission to overeat.
Yeah, it's just going to be food.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I actually wouldn't want to get high again. Like, I wouldn't want that. I would want the thing that if I, like, I'd love to be able to eat Reese's Pieces and never get sick.
This is what this is for. I have done it recently. Yeah. Oh, no, no. I've gotten sick
from eating too many Reese's Pieces. Recently.
I hear you. I'm like that. I used to be like more like that with candy. And now because I had to cut so much sugar out of my diet, I now have such a strong reaction to sugar that I feel sick almost immediately. So I found a way around that by eating like a giant bag of trail mix where it's just metabolizing slightly slower, even though all the raisins are still going around, but this is like a pound that is now a pound of meat. Like it's inside me. I've gained a pound in food alone now. Yeah,
been there.
And nuts are like really filling too. Yeah. So there is this sort of drunk, woozy, like, why did I? So I get it. I'm there. Reese's. I'm right
Delicious.
There. Guess what? As many as you want. No problem.
Oh my God.
What else?
So I guess like I don't eat meat. Mm-hmm. So pepperoni.
Great.
Is my favorite meat that I can't eat. Because I love the pigs.
Great.
I love the piggies.
The Smarties.
And those are my top two, but God, there's so many. Which is my favorite pizza? There's a place called Artichoke in New York.
Okay,
that the slice is as big as your head, and like I can't really be doing that.
Yeah. But what a wonderful feeling of permission when somebody gives it to you. Just one slice.
You have to eat it all. It's an entire heart attack.
Oh, that's great.
And they're like, no, it's not. This time it's not.
That's
okay.
Great. And then this last one is turning back to the even more imaginary stuff. Three things that are not real that you wish were real in this world. And so that could be like dragons. It could be Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. It could be eternal life, like anything that's just not a reality now, but
unicorns.
You can transform. Great.
I'm sure that's, I'm not the first person.
I've never done this category before. I don't think.
I love it.
Yeah. This is off the cuff. If I'm right.
I guess I'll say,
let me give you this example. I don't have strong feelings about Bigfoot one way or the other, but like if I could right now control suddenly everyone who was a skeptic was wrong, I don't believe he's real.
Yeah.
Thus, if I could make him real and everyone was like, fuck.
Yeah.
He really does avoid cameras. But like we finally proved it. I would be so smug at all the scientists that were like, it's impossible. And I'd be like, it is impossible, but I made it real.
I think the heptapod.
Okay,
alien.
Great.
From Arrival. I was going to say Aliens as a plug for my show, People of Earth on TBS.
The show People of Earth on TBS.
Very funny
and charming People of Earth on TBS.
Yeah. And you can only watch it on TBS or on planes. It's very available to everyone all the time who's just only flying on planes on Delta and also has TBS. And even if you have TBS, touch and go. And then I would say mermaids.
Great. Also great. God, these are great.
I feel bad for mermaids now that I made them real. Half fish. They're like, why do I exist?
There may be advantages that we can't even conceive of.
I really hope so. For those mermaids.
They don't need your tears. Okay. And so, of course, since this is MASH, I just need you to tell me when to stop.
Are you starting now?
Yeah. But you know, it's just that swirl.
Okay, stop.
Okay, great. All right, I'm going to pause this.
Feel really good about stop.
I'm going to do some calculations.
I'm going to pee.
I'm going to get my calculator.
While you pause.
You pee. I'll be back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future. I said it. Okay, pick up that microphone, lady, because you are about to get your MASH future delivered unto you.
Absolutely, 100%.
Apparently in biblical form. And now I must give unto you. Listen, this is great. First of all right, listen. I will say this. You didn't get Reese's Pieces.
Oh, Jesus.
You did get unlimited snap of your fingers as much as you want forevermore. Amen. Artichoke pizza.
Okay. All right. That's what
Not
I was
bad.
Expecting.
I mean, that's...
I was curving
because
it.
That's a real variety within just like, you know what I'm saying? You can get anything from there.
And it doesn't impact the environment.
And it doesn't impact the environment.
That's the clause. Because I don't really care about getting fat as much as I do about hurting the planet.
Understood.
And that's something that you can depend on me for. Uh-huh. That opinion always.
That's great.
Being annoying in that way.
That's great. Now, I don't know. Okay, listen. I don't know how this... maybe it's almost like it's a virtual mansion because you don't seem like the kind of person to have a mansion because that somehow seems like it has too big a carbon footprint mm-hmm. in many ways.
Oh, but it's filled with orphans.
Solar.
It's just chock full of orphans.
It's full of orphans. I thought you said it's full of servants. I'm really glad that you said it's full of orphans.
Look, it's not like they're not lifting a finger. I mean, they're helping out.
I'm not saying there's a reason you heard that, Janet. There's a reason you heard what my undertone suggested.
I take care of them, but they also take care of me.
You have a beautiful mansion full of unlimited artichoke pizza on Deep Space Nine. In Deep Space Nine? At Deep Space Nine?
At Deep Space Nine.
At Deep Space Nine.
Interesting.
Which is, I think that's pretty fascinating. Okay. So I'm assuming they're orphans from all over.
Yeah,
and all
we're a ragtag group.
Creeds.
We really are.
Yeah.
We're a ragtag group.
I want to congratulate you on, now for the things I'm maybe more excited about. Number one, I like to imagine you performing your sensational country western music while seated on a unicorn.
Oh my God. Amazing.
I guess you're just prancing through space on a space unicorn is all.
Ugh, please.
Nearer around in its nearest paddock at Deep Space Nine. I also want
to... nerds are totally jacking off.
That's right. That's right. I want to add to that... and now I don't know if you taught Beyonce how to do this, but you as a figure skater.
No.
It's like, I see you figure skating up onto like a half pipe and then landing on the unicorn and then prancing out into space while Beyonce sings
she
to you.
She is the artist of my life.
Beyonce. That's
she's
it.
The artist she's, of my life. She's, I'm doing Adele.
She's your buddy in your life.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the only other person that you're going to have to worry about making happy and being made happy, because I know you're going to spend a lot of time with Beyonce.
And my orphans.
And your orphans. Is your alternate universe husband, Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, I knew he was going to join us. I think, you know, he's lived a lot of lives.
He
has kids.
He's going to enlist in your army of orphan caregivers.
He has, you know, kids of his own, so he gets it. He's there to be a support figure.
This is the best guy you could possibly end up with all those orphans.
Yeah,
that's 100% accurate.
Realistically, he makes a really good partner. It's just a partnership.
Realistically,
you know
he probably
I mean?
Makes a pretty good pizza, too.
He probably...
Not that you need it.
He probably says... He'd probably say, hey, now, to that.
That's right.
But I don't know yet, because we are... going on our first date in space next
week. I can't wait to hear all about it.
Oh my God.
I'm just overjoyed by this MASH future.
It is phenomenal. And I thank you because I really believe, you know, it's just, it's cool, but it's also not too far from my life today. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I know that I can handle
so
it.
So many parallels. It's kind of scary.
And I know that I can handle it.
I know you can handle it. First of all, figure skating is much easier than snowboarding. So we both know we're going to do some triple axels in no time.
I hope so.
Alice, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to do the podcast.
Thank
and for chilling out with me. I'm not even wearing a bra today.
Really?
I've never not put on a bra for a guest.
Thank you. Oh, okay. All right, so it's not just me.
No, I mean, I've never not put on a bra for
oh my
a
God.
You're
but
the
you
first
felt
person I literally thought, I don't feel
Am
like I need
not
to wear
just
a bra.
A walking safe space? Can
I
we
think
just
so.
Say that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel great.
I feel that way too.
People can follow you on Twitter.
Unless
we've
you're a guy that I'm dating,
yeah,
you are
don't
a walking
do it.
Safe space. I will tell you they're afraid of me and they should be.
Understood.
But
Vampire Slayer.
Everyone else.
Didn't get it. you're just at Alice Wetterland.
And
yeah?
I'll tweet.
Mm-hmm. And People of Earth. And when does that come back?
Oh, it comes back next. Well, we're going to be finishing up in July. So it should be hitting
around
July.
The fall. Oh, it starts airing right away.
I think they're going to try to push
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I guess that's
August.
True for the shows on
yeah,
YouTube.
August.
They start rolling yeah. out fast. That's great. And you're great.
Thank you. You're
and,
great.
And guys, I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.